I'm going to start today with a confession. I've gotten hooked on a summer TV series. What? You were expecting something really salacious from me? I saw an advertisement about this program and I was intrigued, and now I'm hooked. It's deemed a combination of a political drama with comedic sci-fi mystery. One of its actors claimed the show is like West Wing meets the Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I'm talking about a show called Brain Dead. Anybody watch it besides me? Come on, come on, come on, come on. Oh, come on. It's on CBS, Monday nights, 9 o'clock. Go home today. Download the first 4 episodes, binge watch it so you're ready for tomorrow night. Because I can assure you, you won't understand it tomorrow night unless you've seen the first 4 episodes. The show's protagonist, Laurel, is a documentary producer who needs money to finish a project, so she goes to work for her U.S. Senator brother just as a partisan budget battle is threatening to shut down the federal government. Sounds kind of normal so far, doesn't it? The trouble is this. Aliens in the form of ants, meaning insects, not the female members of your family, aliens in the form of ants have begun to infiltrate and eat the brains of those people in Washington. The residents, the workers. Those people that are infected undergo personality changes, generally making them more extreme in their behavior and in their partisanship, while giving them an odd attraction to the 1980s hit song from the Cars, "You Might Think I'm Crazy." You remember the one, da 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 da. Come on, da 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 da. I thought we'd have a hymn sing, and now I'm the one that's crazy. That's one song that I didn't need re-entering my brain's playlist. So our intrepid Laurel begins to uncover that something is not quite right as the political machinations take an even more sharp edge than is normal. Providing a sense of authenticity, 24/7 television programming in the background of almost every scene, because I assure you it's all over the place in Washington. These TVs have speeches and interviews with Hillary or the Donald, adding to the growing sense of unreality and partisan confusion. Well, I guess that depends on how much you're adapting to the current election cycle. But what I love about this show is that it gives me a new perspective, a different way of looking at things. What, you might ask, that might be? Well, of course. This explains everything. That's why politics has become so crazy lately. Our politicians' brains have become infected by aliens. It has been oddly comforting to me to look at the news from Washington and the campaign field and live in this fantasy world that they're just the results of alien-infected brains. It is a different perspective, yes. And it reminds me of Ignatian prayer, that is based just on that, a different perspective. Ignatian prayer comes from our rock star Saint Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, and requires that we look at Scripture from a different perspective and discern what new message God may have for us by looking through the text with this different lens. When using this prayer method, we are encouraged to imagine ourselves in the biblical scene and take on a character or perhaps an inanimate object within the scene. As the scripture is slowly read, we are asked to enter into the scene as that character or object and experience the scripture from that perspective. Once, when I was participating in a small group Ignatian prayer exercise where we were reading the story in the Gospel of John about the wedding in Cana, a group member shared with us the perspective of being the jars holding the water that was turned into wine by Jesus. It was a graced perspective that our friend shared with us, that of experiencing and personalizing the miracle of conversion and transformation by Jesus Christ. Let's look at our gospel today from a different perspective, shall we? The parable of the Good Samaritan is a familiar story, isn't it? Quite familiar. It typically has been viewed from the perspective of the Samaritan. Ancient commentators consider the parable an allegory of Jesus' salvific actions in light of the Samaritan's actions. Later commentators give us an interpretation with which we are most familiar, that it is an ethical lesson on how we should take action. But all that has been from the perspective of the Samaritan, so let's refract this familiar story and see what other message for us God might have from it. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't want to take the perspective of the priest or the Levite who walked by holier than thou, unable to be moved by pity. Instead, today, let us take a look at this story through the lens of the man who was stripped, beaten, and left on the road half dead. He's the only character in this story for which we don't have a name or at least a title, like Samaritan, priest, Levite, innkeeper. Perhaps that's to identify him as every man or every woman, just about anyone. We don't know the purpose of his travel, but it is a treacherous road he has taken. Topographically, the road between the two cities drops in elevation from 2,500 feet in Jerusalem to 820 feet below sea level in Jericho over the road's mere 17 miles. It is a difficult road because of that steep downward incline, but it is also treacherous for personal safety reasons because we have several ancient sources besides our text today that report the road to be swarming with bandits and outlaws. So making our way down the road as we take the perspective of the traveler, we are attacked by robbers, stripped of everything, and beaten. I don't know about you, but metaphorically, I have been in this place before. So here we are in the form of this man, lying on the side of the road, barely alive, semi-conscious, unable to take care of ourselves or even cry for help. We see through our haze of pain, first the priest and then the Levite, supposed holy men of God, pass us by. Now, they couldn't be preoccupied in prayer or plans for the day, as some have claimed, because the scripture tells us that both of these men saw us lying in this state on the road and passed on the other side, meaning they went out of their way to avoid us. Now, I've heard another excuse for their behavior, that as holy men, they would become ritually unclean and could not officiate at the temple if they came in contact with blood. But that is not a valid reason either for their behavior, because the law in Leviticus provides the means by which we are to be cleansed from ritual impurity. The priest and Levite just didn't want to be bothered with us, didn't want to enter into relationship with us, these people who are fellow Jews, one of us. Imagine how heart-wrenching that was for us to lie there, barely hanging on for life as they walk by. But soon that feeling is replaced by horror when the next traveler does not pass us by. For it is a Samaritan, a member of a despised race of people, one we have been instructed to shun, avoid, and disdain. This Samaritan not only stops, but he comes to us, begins to touch us and treat our wounds by pouring his own oil and wine, his own sustenance upon our wounds. If that weren't enough, the Samaritan picks us up and puts us on his animal. We probably cannot sit on it with our own strength, so the Samaritan is propping us up on his animal as he guides it to the next town. He takes us into an inn and cares for us all night. In the morning, he leaves, but we hear him give the innkeeper money for our care, and tell him he will return to repay if more is required for our stay. How do we react to this? Is our heart moved by the actions of the Samaritan, as was the heart moved, as was his heart moved by seeing us lying on the road? Or do we hustle out of there once he's gone, crawling or scrambling or however we can, getting out of that place and getting away from the discomfort of what it is to be in relationship with that person? Kind of like how the priest and the Levite avoided us lying on the road, right? What would you do if you were that man? Jesus forces us to change our perspective in this parable of the Good Samaritan. For in this story, the one who was labeled by Jewish society as anything but good was the only one who demonstrated goodness. And once the Samaritan took his first step toward the man lying on the road, that action identified these two men as neighbors. Now, typically, the label or the identification of neighbor is associated with close proximity or joint membership in some club, society, religion, or race. But this parable illustrates that is not the deeper truth. If so, then the priest and the Levite, and not the Samaritan, would have received the label of good, both being members of the same religious team as the injured man. In telling this story, Jesus embeds this story in the very lives of his listeners and identifies that some type of relational contact is what makes people neighbors, and that sometimes we just don't choose our neighbors. We are neighbors because we are interdependent. The Samaritan recognized that. And this interdependence is a quality of being human. Jesus is calling us into a new perspective, calling us as a church, as a community, and as a country. And that perspective is that we need to understand and accept our interdependency, our interconnection as human beings. We are in relationship with all humans in one form or another. Because I have African American friends, I hurt when African American men are seemingly randomly killed. I fear for their lives and the lives of their sons. And because I have friends who are policemen, I personally feel the loss of the lives of the Dallas policemen and women this week. I fear for the lives of the members of the police force as they put on their uniform each day to protect me. When we are all neighbors, when we understand we are all neighbors, then when one of us hurts, we all hurt. When one of us is diminished, we are all diminished. Who is the Samaritan in your life? Who would be the enemy or the despised person you would least want to rescue you, restore you, befriend you, be your neighbor? Perhaps it is that difficult person at work or at school. Perhaps it would be the one who is across the political aisle from you or the one who holds a different theological position than you. One who is of a different religion than you. Maybe it's that immigrant trying to sneak over the border for a better life, or the one who served you at the restaurant last night. If Jesus is unwilling to allow labels to separate us from our neighbors, from our fellow members of the human race, then he is definitely not going to give us cover to do so either. If we can begin to view the other, the Samaritans in our lives, as neighbor, then we will begin to live into God's vision for the church and for the world, a radical vision that calls us into relationship with all our neighbors, those we have chosen and those we might not have chosen. And if so, maybe, just maybe, we will no longer live as those who seem to be brain dead.